You're listening to WorkWire, sponsored by Career Club and SHRM. Career Club has a range of services aimed at job seekers with an empathetic approach. Whether you are a job seeker yourself, know someone who is in job search, or an HR professional looking to bring a more empathetic approach to transitioning employees, check out career.club. If you are an HR professional seeking to enhance your skills, subscribe to SHRM and explore their extensive resources. Visit SHRM.org. That's SHRM.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The WorkWire. I am Bob Goodwin, president of Career Club, joined by my co-host and good friend, the president and CEO of SHRM, Johnny C. Taylor Jr. Johnny, how are you?
I'm doing well, my man. How are you?
I am doing better than I deserve, as a friend of mine says. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Awesome. So as we are wont to do here on The WorkWire, we're going to talk about things that are in the news these days and how that impacts whether you're an employer, a worker, a student of the labor markets, an HR practitioner, whatever it may be. And today's topic is one that I know that you're very passionate about. You talk a lot about, you're educating people on, and that's the topic of reskilling. Yes. If we could just sort of tee it up quickly, in your view, what is reskilling and why do people need to be paying attention to this?
Well, so the best way to describe it, there's all sorts of fancy definitions. Basically, it's learning. And for years, we've talked about lifelong learning as a concept. Yeah. But it was really kind of if you wanted to, because in times past, you could go to college or not. And then if you went to college and learned accounting, accounting was accounting for your 30-year career, and you retire and go off. And to the extent there were new ways of accounting, that was for the next generation to sort. Well, it doesn't work that way anyway. In fact, what we know is jobs are so significantly changing, disappearing, being, you know, meaningfully reconstituted that what you learned 5 years ago is probably outdated. And sometimes in 3 years, look at what we've seen with AI and the introduction of that. We know technologists have always been used to this, for example, because the language has changed from this to that, to that, to that. So they had to constantly learn. The rest of us didn't. We just kind of learned what we learned and it worked always. Well, that has changed. And so reskilling is a thing. There are two different terms, though. There's reskilling and upskilling.
Okay.
Reskilling, they're related, but sometimes very different. Upskilling really speaks to mobility and being prepared for the next type of job, typically associated with career trajectory. I'm an LPN, a licensed practical nurse. I want to be a registered nurse, so I need to upskill. And if I want to become an MD one day, then I have to do that. Reskilling, however, is I'm that LPN. I remain that LPN, but guess what? There's new equipment. There are new medications. There are new treatments for different diseases. And so there was no COVID to respond to 4 years ago. And then there was. So that's sort of the difference. There's reskilling and upskilling. You don't necessarily have to upskill. Unless, you know, perhaps you're not interested in career trajectory, but you for sure have to reskill.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that I've heard you talk about is basically what the mechanisms are for helping companies enact that. And I feel bad in the way I just said that, because this isn't all on the employer. This is very much a shared responsibility. Can you talk about that for a minute? Because, you know, being passive as the employee, I think, is fatal for your career and in your job satisfaction, that you're waiting for somebody to do something to you or for you versus owning it, having the agency for your skills and embracing that. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, it's interesting. The pendulum always swings. If you go back to when we were younger, we're still young, younger, it was very much, you know, I would hear employers say, your degree is your degree. Your education is your education. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. That's on you. And so we, for a while, understood that skilling and reskilling was our obligation. It was about our survival in the workforce. Fast forward, the pendulum swung to, we have a shortage of talent, and employers started investing in Heavenly, and they were really, really committed to ensuring that you were prepared for the next job. And now we're in the middle, where it's a shared responsibility. Where, yes, it is in your best interest to remain marketable, and therefore you've got to make sure that you are constantly reskilling. But guess what? Employers need talent, and we need it badly, and it's getting worse because of the birth rate challenges, replenishment rate challenges that we have all over the globe. Yeah. And so as a result, both of us now have to commit ourselves to being intentional about reskilling, and in those instances when we want upward trajectory in our career, upskilling.
Yeah. So let's talk about the aging. That's actually a very interesting point. And, you know, there's a lot of developed countries or more developed countries that are getting older. They're not replenishing.
Yes.
Right. And then we've got countries like India, yes. you know, and most of Africa that is very young.
Yes.
And, you know, will really kind of be creating a lot of the workforce of the future. I know that you're at the B20 in India recently, yes. and you talked about this. Do you mind sharing with folks, you know, how you sort of, I think sometimes, and again, I'll just speak for myself, can get pretty narrow-minded and just think about, but just how's this a U.S. problem? But we live in a global economy. It's not just a U.S. issue. Can you maybe share some of the thoughts that you shared at the B20?
Yeah, a couple of them. One, the world is flat. I say that.
Thank you, Thomas Friedman.
That's right. But it has flattening in the sense of opportunity around the globe. And we saw that with the pandemic, where now people can work from anywhere, which means we can get talent from anywhere. Even if you're a US-based company, you can get talent in India and vice versa. So one of the things that we've learned is this global workforce issue is just that. It's a global issue. It's not just the US or Japan, which, you know, I don't know if you know this, and your listeners will be fascinated by this. Japan actually sells more adult diapers than baby diapers. It's
wow.
a fascinating.
You know that?
More adult diapers than baby diapers. And that's really interesting because it speaks to the aging of yeah. their population. And the United States is getting older in significant ways. And we talked about on another Work Wire, the fact that there are 4 million fewer students in college right now. And that's because fewer people were born. And so globally, we have a challenge. So we decided to get together, or some others decided to get together in India for what's called the B20. For those who don't know, the G20 is when the 20 leaders, the leaders of government, by the way, presidents, prime ministers, kings, et cetera, of the 20 biggest economies get together and think about how they're going to make the world work from an economic standpoint. At the same time, and political standpoint, then they join the B20, which are leaders, business leaders of those 20 biggest economies. And so we're there, and much to my surprise, I was invited not just last year in Indonesia, but this year in India. Everyone's talking about the future of work. And top mm-hmm. of the list is get ready, reskilling and upskilling. And here's where that comes in, or skilling broadly. And I tell you why. They said, yes, certain parts of the world, they're getting really old, and therefore we've got to do something to take those older people and allow them to stay in the workforce longer. And that means reskilling them. You know, what they learned 30 years ago doesn't apply anymore, and we need them to stay in their workplace. But here's something, Bob, that really struck me as fascinating. Even in parts of the world like India and Africa, which have younger populations, mm-hmm. they've realized that many of those people don't have the skills they need. So you're young, which helps, but you don't have the skills at the current job market. So what good the job market demands? So what good does it mean to have 1,000 really young people who don't understand AI? What's the point of it? That's no better than having 1,000 old people who don't understand AI. You just don't have people who have the skills that you need in the modern day economy. So globally, there is less a birth rate problem in different parts of the world. You pointed out some people have very young populations, some have older, but all of us globally have a skills problem. We don't have enough people with the right skills to do the jobs that our economies are demanding.
And so it sounds like from an ecosystem perspective, if we think about supply and demand, there's a lot of potential supply. The right. demand is there, but demand right. is basically creating the need for these new skills. And therefore, it's in their best interest to be creating programs that allow this, you know, potential to actually be fulfilled. Is that fair?
I love that potential supply. That's right. We have all assumed, it's such a great point, Bob, that just because you have a ton of people and they are young, that you won't have a supply problem. In fact, a lot of the parts of the world do have a supply problem because those folks don't have the skills that employers need.
Yeah. And one of the things that I heard you talk about that I thought was just fascinating was, because we live in a global economy, it's flat, that we've got access between technology and other vehicles to access that talent pool. But one of the things we talked about was immigration law and being yes. able to bring in that talent, and how we need to maybe relook at who we allow in the country to fill the gaps that we're finding when our own talent pool isn't meeting the need. Could you talk about that for a sec?
Yeah, and that was a big topic at the B20 from two perspectives. One, a country like Japan, which had for years been very insular and didn't want others outside as a homogenous society. Well, now all of a sudden they're willing to bring people in because they need them. So their immigration is actually, they've awakened now to the idea of allowing people to immigrate because they need them. That's one. On the other side, you have places like Japan, India, who have this huge population, 1.4 billion people, growing, netting an additional 14 million people per year. And they actually have more people than they have jobs. So unemployment is pretty high in India, and they have the informal sector and the formal sector. So now what they're doing is saying, we will actually be a net exporter of yes. talent. So Japan, if you need people, we can send you people. If United States, where you have an aging population, healthcare concerns, and you don't have enough nurses and physicians and engineers, we'll actually export them to you. So it's really fascinating that everyone is solving for this. And therefore, all of the walls that were built over time, anti-immigration, are coming down because we need to move people around in this 8 billion person planet. And talent is everywhere, but at once nowhere. Like, there are parts of the world that just need it and can't get it.
Yeah, so when we think about some of the major functional areas or industry areas, we talk a lot about technology with AI. You had mentioned nurses. Healthcare would be another major area. Yes. As you're talking with these business leaders, are there other aspects of the economy, jobs that need to be done? Maybe that's the best way to say it. Think about jobs that need to be done that are going to most benefit from reskilling.
Yes. So the trades, you and I talk a lot about the opportunities. We always think about the white collar jobs. There's a whole bunch of blue collar jobs that are absolutely not being filled. Manufacturing environments rely very heavily. And as you can imagine, most countries really focus on their manufacturing capacity. Well, you can't do it because you don't have enough people. So manufacturing jobs and the trades are a really big opportunity. It's why apprenticeships are becoming a big thing. It's why we're willing to move. It used to be that if you wanted to get a special visa, you'd have a PhD from MIT or Harvard to be, you know, to get a technical. We only moved really, really smart people around from an immigration standpoint. And now we're saying, actually, we need someone on that oil rig. By the way, we need someone in that manufacturing plant who can actually solder two pieces of metal together. These are the things we are now looking at. So that's one area. The other is hospitality. It's one of the few areas where you have industries where you can't do those jobs remotely. Think about housekeepers. Think about, you know, there's a lot of jobs that, frankly, we need people to do. At one point, I was at Paramount. You know, we had a big theme park business. And every year, Disney knows this, we bring people in from out the world to staff those parks because we don't have domestic supply sufficient to serve our businesses. So I can tell you, hospitality, broadly writ large, is a big area, and we see it a lot in manufacturing. Those are two areas, in addition to the obvious nursing and where shortages were, and technology.
Yeah, one thing, I'm gonna pivot this a little bit, Johnny, because we're talking a lot about hard skills.
Yes.
And yet we've got a workforce that's also changing with what their expectations are from their employer, bringing their whole selves to work, the you know, emotional, mental wellness side of it. And from a reskilling to your well-made point about drawing the distinction between upskilling, I'm not just trying to go from, you know, the controller to the treasurer to the CFO, but just broadening what all I know how to do and how I can contribute. I think a lot about, you know, empathy, emotional intelligence, resilience, and how we can, you know, starting at the top of the organization, reskill to be able to address the broader suite of needs that workers are bringing to the workplace.
Yeah, and it's an area that really gives human resources professionals, you know, my work at SHRM and our colleagues, it's a real challenge because at once the secondary school systems have not given, and we talk about this a lot, They've not prepared people to go in and do jobs like they did in times past. In times past, you finished high school. You could actually, you were kind of ready to go do a job. So since that isn't happening as well as it was in times past, what we're now doing is we're obligated to train people to do jobs that they should have been trained to do in the secondary system. Okay, that's the hard skill, if you will. Those schools also have done a really poor job, in part because society's changed and the culture doesn't allow you to have some of the conversations you need to have with children that they have with us, but also things like the pandemic where people were working remotely and schooling remotely, and so they weren't educated in the ways that we were. What that means is we are now inheriting a workforce that does not have the soft skills or the, I hate to use the term soft, but the living skills, the things that will complement their technical skills. And so now guess what? We as employers also have to do that part. So think about it. I've brought you in to do work, and instead, I've got to spend this much to get you prepared to technically do the job and this much to make sure that you you do the job and work in a civil environment and you have the right empathy and the right. It's all over the place. So people actually, I actually heard a CHRO say this the other day. I think our employees are spending about 25-30% of their time that I'm paying for, in training, different types of training. And that's scary for an employer, because what if that goes to 40 or 50%? Like, that's a lot of investment in training. And I know the folks out there who are training and development professionals, that may make your hearts flutter. You know, it's a wonderful thing, but it's expensive. And that money has to come from somewhere. And the time, like, it takes two people to now do in some time what one person did in the past, because two of those people are spending 30% of their time being trained on the harder stuff and the softer stuff.
So I want a couple of things back on HR folks. You know, we've done a previous episode here on the WorkWire talking about AI and that stuff. And then Sherm, you gave a phenomenal talk on this, that your HR people are uniquely qualified, you know, to address some of these issues. It seems to me that, you know, reskilling HR folks, so they're not just the policy police and, you know, compliance and things like that, but actually doing the things that are uniquely human.
Yes.
To be right, radical listeners, empathetic, to be in tune with people and the culture and how that impacts the business from a retention, productivity, corporate brand perspective. Those are huge contributions to be able to impact an organization with.
Yeah, and all of the undergirding of all of those topics is data, which I got to tell you, you know, not just collecting the data, but analyzing the data, using it to predict how human beings will perform at what levels. We're looking at productivity. We're looking at efficiency. We're looking at all of these things. And that's a huge opportunity for reskilling and, frankly, upskilling for HR professionals. It's this whole AI discussion. There's not a headline a day that doesn't say AI is great, but it's coming for your job. That's the headline, right? And so it's freaking people out. Well, HR, actually, there's some truth to that, because companies are trying to find ways to be more efficient, in large part because we have a supply problem. We just talked about it. In a country of ours, in Japan and other parts of the world, 15 of the largest GDP countries have a replenishment rate problem. So we're being forced to find ways to get the work done, more work done with fewer people, because there are just fewer people, at least within our borders. Put aside the immigration conversation that we just had. And then the second thing is those people don't exactly want to work as hard as we and prior generations did. So, you know, work-life balance. My mother never talked about work-life balance. My grandparents wouldn't dare think about work-life balance. And here we are now with a population. And I'm not saying this is good or bad, by the way. I'm not knocking the concept. What I'm saying to you is that this puts a lot of pressure on HR professionals as business people to say, we've got to give the company a return on this investment. And then at what cost? You and I, later, I'd love to have a conversation around wage inflation. We're seeing it, you know, and so as a result, HR folks are having to understand data. They've got to be skilled up. That wasn't in our, that was sort of for the CFO to figure out in times past. But now in organizations where typically your largest or your second largest expense line is people, then the HR person is expected, and we have to be skilled and reskilled to do that job. People are, in a knowledge-based economy, your capital. And that capital, we've got to understand and know how to manipulate and get a return on said capital.
No, and so for me, it seems like, and I'm not trying to make this a Sherm commercial by accident, but it seems
that you can do it.
but the way that the HR professional, one, just in how they do their own job, but also basically train the trainer. So
yes.
Basically be able to evangelize how to bring these kinds of skills throughout the organization. We've talked before, first line managers are really the make or break in a business because they're the ones that are dealing directly with people. They're the closest to the customer. They're the closest to the frontline employee. And they're the ones that are dealing with the stressed out, freaked out, you know, I can't come to work today because like I just can't handle my life today.
Right.
How do they, you know, impact frontline managers? How do they impact the C-suite to create an environment that actually understands how to not manage, but lead the modern employee all to the point of hitting those KPIs
right.
that you talked about? This has to result in a positive business impact, not just because it's nice or sweet to do.
That's right. You know, it's funny when you use the term that I love, the modern employee. That is, that word alone, that description, those two words describe and make the strongest case for HR skilling and reskilling. Is what you knew as an HR leader 5 years ago, just 5 years ago, most of that has been thrown out, tossed out, and it's just not the way the world works. Largely because you have a new generation that has come in and we're ushering in Generation Z now. We've talked about millennials forever and now there's a new generation and there is a real distinctly different way that they think about work, their relationship with work. So that's part of it. But secondly, technology. And then thirdly, COVID. Like I know specifically there are things that we used to take for granted 3 years ago as the way things go. As an experienced HR person, I know this. And that applied for the prior 20 years. And then on a dime, but think about it. I read an article today, 30%, almost 30 to 40% of the, no. So 30% of the workforce now works remotely. Mm. And depends upon how you count full-time equivalents and part-time employees. But you're talking 30 to 40% of the workforce. That was not the case 3 years ago. Period. And this concept of hybrid, this is brand new, right? The idea, for the most part, there were always some, but generally speaking, at scale, 70% of your workforce is working remotely. Sometimes, what is hybrid? Those are all skilling opportunities. How do we engage yes. those people, right? How do we ensure that our culture, it was easier mm-hmm. to develop and maintain culture when everyone came to work 9 to 5, we're in the building, you could do that. Now, 30% of these people will never come into the building and the other 70% will come 3 days a week. The other 2 days, they're not there. All of this has required a new way of thinking about human capital. And it's why the level of upskilling and reskilling necessary for HR people right now is through the roof because overnight the world changed.
You know, I read an article recently about Smucker. You may have seen the same article.
I saw that.
Smucker company and where they're going to core weeks. So yes. they've got a highly distributed workforce because not everybody wants to work in Orrville, Ohio, as it turns yes. out. And yet they're trying to get the greatest talent like everybody else is. They're in this battle for talent. And I thought they came up with, you know, a interesting next step in the evolution. I don't know that it's the final state. We may never know what the final state is, but a really interesting creative and kind of sourced solution yeah. to let's identify a year in advance the core weeks we need people in the office, and we are going to organize planning meetings, other training sessions. You talked about that a few minutes ago. We're going to be very intentional, very deliberate about not only having you here, but why we have you here, what we expect will be accomplished when you're here. And it was very interesting to me to see their chief people officer, you know, really having a lead role in that. That's reskilling for her. That's reskilling for her entire team, and then the teams and the departments that they influence.
That's right. No, it's and I loved reading that article. I was fascinated. Naturally, and I'll say this, we have to be careful. These are all grand experiments.
Yes.
It may work in that small town in Ohio. It may not work in another part of the country. It may work in that industry, and it might not work in another industry. What I hope they're going to do is literally measure very closely, back to this data point, is collect data on employee productivity, employee morale and engagement, employee turnover, the cost of doing, like, all of this stuff has to be measured, because it's easy to say this is what we're going to do and it's novel and the Wall Street Journal writes about it. Okay. Okay. Whether it works or not is a whole different conversation over time. And maybe it works uniquely in that environment and won't work in others. Who knows? But even for the rest of us who are not working for the Smucker's company, we should be studying that as well and trying to learn from it. There's skilling that can be done, not within just the confines of your work environment, but broadly. What are other people doing? What are the trends? What are people trying? And not, this is the biggest thing I want to say, is we can't claim victory so soon. One of the challenges, I've heard a lot of people talk about that, like, oh, that's going to be great. That's what we're going to do. I said, maybe, maybe not. How about let them do it for a while and see? And then how about calling that chief people officer, chief human resources officer, Smucker's, and saying, can I visit with you? Can I really see how this works? Can I see the upside and the downside? Because every decision has some disadvantage, some downside to it. So these are the things that we've got to do. And that's all skilling. Skilling isn't just formally going to a class or a school. Reskilling yourself is also curiosity, which leads you to figure out what's working and what isn't working and what might we try differently.
Yeah, one thing that I'll say to folks who are listening, who are, you know, primarily not in a management role, is that the ownership for reskilling, I believe, is on you. Like, absolutely, you should be doing something that you are genuinely interested in, right? To use your word, curious about, because the world is as slow as it's ever going to be today.
That's right.
And technology, the pace of technology, you know, again, is just unabated. So if you're not interested in what it is that you're doing, almost by definition, you're going to start to lag, because you don't have the energy and you don't have the interest to go pursue continuing to reinvent yourself over time. And then one other point on this, Johnny, is
and you also are in big trouble. If that's your mindset, you've got to rewire your mindset, because you're going to be in big trouble. If you stand still, you are going to fall behind.
And so just amplifying that point for a minute is also that careers have chapters, and that this isn't all linear. And so that you can reinvent yourself, you can reskill yourself multiple times in your career as your life situation changes, as your own body of knowledge increases, and you're like, start to put pieces of a puzzle together and synthesize a new career path for yourself. The reskilling, it's like what we talk with technology. You know, if you're benefit finding in this, it could be really exciting. This is cool. Like, I don't have to get a degree in something and I said, get it and forget it. Like, okay, well, that's what I am now. But it's right. Like, no, I can continue to reinvent myself. I don't have to do this for the rest of my life. And given savings rates, inflation, and lifespan, it's highly likely that you're going to need to do this anyway. Yes. So embrace it.
No, that's I hope the biggest takeaway as people are listening today is, you're right, if you're forced. We started with, my thesis was, it's both the employer and the employee's responsibility. And I think that's right. I think it's a shared responsibility. But at the end of the day, it's yours. Because whatever skills you acquire, they're mobile, right? They can go with you. So the employer could find a way to replace you either with a machine or another person across the planet somewhere, right? In this world that we have with immigration and everything. But you, once you acquire that knowledge, my grandmother would always tell me, is the one thing no one can take from you is knowledge. And so you've got to acquire it. You have to be very intentional about it, or you could be in trouble. In a knowledge-based economy, If you are not constantly upgrading your own knowledge, then you won't be able to participate in this economy. And I just had an experience with a friend of mine, 55-year-old friend of mine, who called me near in tears. And this is a man who's provided a very nice middle-class income for his family. And he said, you know, he's in a space, I don't want to say too much about him because I don't want to out his business, but where he did not continue to upskill and reskill, more importantly. And so all of a sudden his boss came in and said, I'm replacing you. And so he called me and he said, it's ageism and these people are horrible and da da da. And what am I going to do? And I said, may or may not have been ageism, but I got to tell you, I have constantly, as your friend, suggested that you get these new skills, and you resisted them because you were fat and happy. You were living in this world and you had two cars and a house and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it came crumbling down. In part, what your manager may have been trying to say, and I don't know this person's manager, but is, I need you to be modern, right? I need you to have modern day skills in this environment. And you are still riding on those things that you brought us 20 years ago, and they're not as valuable. Now there's this new person who could be 25, but also could be 55. They just kept up, like, with the, and that's why. So I have a friend now who's now unemployed, has now been unemployed for 3 months, had 6 months of savings, of course, as we were all told, you know, 3 to 6 months of your salary, right? But it's ticking down quickly. And you've got three kids at home and a wife. And you're like, uh-oh, what do I do? And I said, this is the best. I mean, he is a perfect example and illustration of why you must retool. Because he wants to work. He's a smart enough guy, but it doesn't have the necessary skills to get a new job.
Yeah. And so, as you know, at Career Club, we have, we call it Next Placement, but in Career Transition Services. And one of the most, if I had to do a word cloud of what people say, I was blindsided. And, yes. And a little bit of me is like, really?
Really?
Because should you have been blindsided? Because as companies continue to tighten their belts, they're counting every penny. They're looking at what's the return that we're getting for a given individual's contribution.
Right.
We'll talk about Microsoft's comp plan on another day, but can you measure your impact? If you are not reskilling or upskilling to your, again, well, maybe differentiation, if you are not continuing to be able to build your own body of knowledge to be able to contribute at a higher level in a way that is meaningful, impactful, and visible, then don't be surprised on another day when you're a cell on a spreadsheet that looks like a cost savings.
And there you have it. No, I'm glad we ended on this as little. We usually end very happy and, you know, and getting people inspired. But the fact of the matter is this presents an existential threat to every one of us in the workforce.
Yes.
And that's if you're an HR person listening today, if you're a people manager, if you're a technical, hourly employee, if you are not willing, and more than willing, if you are not intentional about skilling, you are going to find yourself in trouble. And you said something about lifespan. We're living longer. So in times, you know, and historically, you didn't really have to reskill because you kind of retired at 62, 65, and then you died, right? I mean, but you're likely to live well into your 80s and 90s, which means you probably are going to work past 65. And to your point, there's so many changes between the time that you get 65 and 75. There may be two or three significant changes in technology and how we do work and what we do that you just must decide with a lot of intentionality and commitment to reskill yourself. Lifelong learning is more than a phrase. It's the way the world works now.
Yeah. And so, sorry, I can't help myself, but to be a bit optimistic is that we always have agency. We have control.
Yes.
Life did not happen to you. You always have choices. You always have choices. And do you want to watch football today? Or do you want to maybe spend an hour reading up or getting a certification in something or just generally adding to your skill set and your body of knowledge?
Yes.
These are all choices that people get to make all the time. And I'm just a huge advocate of helping people. You're not a victim.
No.
This didn't happen to you. things do happen. I'm not saying that the weather doesn't happen. It does happen. It's how we deal with it, how we anticipate it and position ourselves. That is always a choice that people have. And I want people to be able to embrace the choice that they have. Yes, there's a carrot and a stick element to this, you know, and you do need to be aware of the consequences of not taking action. But the good news is the choice to take action is always yours.
Always yours. Always yours. So with that, I just hope that people seriously think about it. Work gives you dignity, but work also allows you to live a quality life. And so we've got to figure this out. And employers are going to help you make the decision in ways that they haven't in times past. If you are no longer relevant, they will move on and find someone who is, or a machine that can do what you've been doing.
100%. So, Johnny, as always, I benefit greatly. I hope our listeners and viewers are benefiting as much as I do from this exchange. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe and comment. If you're listening to this on the podcast, we'd love for you to rate and review. We thank you for investing a few minutes with us today on The Workwire, and please make sure to check out the next episode here next week. Thanks so much, everybody. And thank you, Johnny.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Check out career.club for personalized help with your job search. Visit shrm.org to become part of the largest human resources organization worldwide.